You are listening to KPTZ 91.9 in Port Townsend. Welcome to Book Lovers Cafe. Book Lovers Cafe is a program of author interviews and book reviews with a local perspective. I'm your host, Chris Wilson, and you can listen on Wednesdays after 5 o'clock. 5 years of editing the Motherlode column for the New York Times taught our guest, K.J. Dell'Antonia, this. Family can be a source of joy, not stress, but for many of us, it's just not. She writes regularly on the personal and policy aspects of parenthood for the New York Times and other publications, and she's the co-host of hashtag MWriting podcast. KJ lives in New Hampshire with her husband, 4 children, assorted horses, chickens, dogs, and cats, and I'm so excited to welcome her right in our studio today. Welcome, KJ.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, right off the bat, I'd like to once again say the title of the book, and your book is called How to Be a Happier Parent, Raising a Family, Having a Life, and Loving Almost Every Minute.
Yes.
So, a wonderful title.
Thank you.
And I want to ask you, there's been a lot of books about raising kids.
Yep. I've read most of them.
This. From all the doctors and authorities to all kinds of personal memoirs. And there's just, everybody thinks they have something to say about being a parent. So what made you decide that your book was going to be different?
So I had this opportunity to spend all this time talking to other parents as a journalist. So I get sort of billed sometimes as a parenting expert. Someone will bring me on the radio and I'll hear them introduce me and I'll just cringe because I'm not a parenting expert. Please don't ask my kids if I'm a parenting expert. What I am is a journalist who's been on this beat for a really long time who had a problem that I could see was shared. When I took my job with the New York Times, I was the full-time editor and lead writer for the Motherlode column. And yeah, it was a fantastic job. And all around me were, you know, the parents who were submitting their writing and the parents that I was interviewing for various things. And I could just feel this really high level of stress that everybody was experiencing around having our families. And at the same time, my husband and I, you know, this is not like a judgment. We were living it. We're right in the middle of this. We've got 4 kids and they've got all kinds of things going on. And every day we get up and we sort of lace up our skates and we get them to where they have to go on time. And we run around and then we get them after school and we deal with the fact that their school ends long before our jobs end. And we get the, you know, the after school care mm-hmm. and the activities and all the things. And then we get to the end of the day and we're just wiped. And at some point, I just was like, this is not fun. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not like I was expecting unicorns and rainbows, but I didn't. Raising a family should be some work, but there should be a lot of, or I felt like we were missing the joy that I so clearly could be in it. And I knew that we were not alone in that.
So a lot of people in the introduction, we mentioned that you lived in New Hampshire and you know, they might picture kind of a bucolic farm, gentle lifestyle, but it sounds like it's just as crazy as it would be if you were living in Brooklyn.
Well, we do have some, actually, when I started the book, we did not live on a farm. Mm-hmm. So, but we do have some of the bucolic farm lifestyle, and that is some of the change that we've made that helps us to sort of slow down the activity level and that sort of thing. But no, for the most part, I've got 4 kids who play travel hockey, and that involves quite a bit. Yes, you're nodding because that can be really insane.
That's one of the things I said no to.
Yeah, that's about the only thing we said yes to. And it's mm-hmm. kind of funny that sports and activities as a whole, and I would love it if we get off on that. But yeah, it's not... It's a little less crazy. I do think it is. And there's some a lot of choice involved mm-hmm. in that. You know, we could live in Brooklyn and we don't. But in terms of the amount of sort of other parents that are all, you know, we're all sort of in there trying to do the same things. We're all worried about the same stuff when it comes to screen time and whether our kids are getting enough sleep and you know, whether they're learning the things that they're going to need to learn to be adults and have these jobs that we can't even imagine right now, because that's what they say about, you know, the jobs of the future, is that they're things that don't even exist. Those worries are not any different in New Hampshire than they are in Seattle or Port Townsend or New York. It's all there.
Well, this book is full of practical solutions and is really encouraging to parents. And I think that's one of the things that makes it a little different. It's not you must do this to succeed kind of book. And so I love the phrase, let's get out of the rug rat race. That's beautiful. And so what are some of the things, the practical solutions that you would recommend for parents who have also read Tiger Mother,
right,
have also want their kids to be very successful and be high achievers and feel like they have to set the bar for them?
Wow. Yeah, and I didn't really answer the question of sort of what makes this book different. And some of it, well, first of all, it's more about us as parents, mm-hmm, and what we're doing than it is about the kids. And I don't think, and one of the things we need to do to be happier about our lives with our families and our role in raising our kids is let go of this idea that we have some control over the outcome, because we do not. And I enjoyed Tiger Mother. And, you know, I think her girls, as far as I know, are doing great. But that's not a style that suits me. And it's not a style that necessarily suits every parent. And I don't know, I can't speak to her level of happiness. Mm-hmm. But what I am hoping that people will take away from my book is that this is not a task with an outcome that we are trying to achieve, this raising a family business. This is 20 to 25 plus years of your life that you are in your house with your wonderful children, doing, you know, living this family life together that you probably, you know, set out to have. This is what we wanted. This is a big chunk of who we are and the time that we're going to have on this planet. Let's find a way to make it, you know,
more
great
fun
for everybody. Well, it's so funny you say that, because the original title of the book was, I titled it, This Should Be Fun. Mm-hmm. My agent said, well, that sounds like you're telling people what they should do. So let's call it This Could Be Fun. So we called it This Could Be Fun. And the subtitle has always been the same, Raising a Family, Having a Life, and Loving Almost Every Minute. But as I kept writing it, people would say, what's your book about? And I would say, well, basically, it's about how to be a happier parent. And as we got closer and closer to actually publishing it, I was like, actually, that's what it's about. Because at some point, I actually made a list of like fun things to make things more fun. And I looked at this list of fun things and I just went, I don't want to do fun things. I mean, you know, I love fun as much as the next person, but I don't want to do more. That is not the goal here. I just want to enjoy the things that I'm doing already more. So that was sort of the moment when the book sort of crystallized. And I was like, that's the goal. Enjoy where we are.
Okay, talking about parents being happy and that coming down to their kids, do happier parents mean that the kids will be happier and more well-adjusted?
Well, happier people have better relationships. Happier people make better employees. Happier people make better friends, and they give more to charity, and they're just, you know, they sort of serve the world better. And yes, they do. They have better relationships with their children. Are you directly going to make your children happy by being happy yourself? Not necessarily. But that's not really the goal either, because the other thing I can guarantee you is that making your children happy is not going to in turn, you know, sort of flip around and make you happy. Nobody's happiness should or can really depend on the happiness of the people around them. And that is I've now leapfrogged enormously over this whole conversation that I like to have about why, as a parent, you can be happy even when your children are not.
Oh, well, let's delve into
that. Okay, so let's delve into that, because that makes a lot of people, that's one of those statements that causes a lot of my fellow parents to sort of take back, you know, and they raise their eyebrows and they're, well, I can't be happy when my children aren't happy. That is not my job. I can only be as happy as my least happy child. Isn't that the saying? And the answer to that is no. We need to be, and I'm not saying be like happy rainbows, you know, glorious, you know, dancing around, possibly pointing and going, ha ha ha, I don't have homework and you do. Yeah, that's not, that's not what I mean, although you're welcome to think that, and sometimes I do. We can be okay when our children are not feeling okay. When our kids have a big crushing blow, whether it is, you know, the loss of the balloon that they wanted so desperately at age three, or the fact that in second grade they don't get into the class with their best friend, or they don't make the team, or they fail the test, or eventually they don't get into the college that they want to go to. It's on us not to take, we should not jump on their emotional roller coaster. That's their thing. That's their emotion. It's their disappointment, and they need to be able to have it without worrying about us. Because when we react to their disappointment as strongly as they do, a couple of things happen for them. The kid that comes home and says, I didn't make the team, and that causes you to sort of get all up in arms and start worrying and maybe start making some phone calls and you know, you're reacting exactly. They're looking at you kind of thinking, and there's, wait, maybe this actually is a really big deal. I should be upset, instead of what, you know, you should be giving them, which is, oh, I'm sorry, you didn't make the team. That's okay. It's going to pass. You're depriving them of that adult perspective, which you are, you know, you're supposed to be the one giving them that. So part of them is thinking, man, maybe next time I shouldn't try out for the team if this is going to upset my parents so much. Or when they come home with some social, you know, disappointment, they didn't get invited to the birthday party or whatever, and you really go right, oh, this is terrible, I'm so sorry, I don't know what, you know, what are we going to do? You really write in them, they're with them. You know, part of them is going, boy, maybe I just shouldn't tell you about this stuff, because it seems like it's upsetting you almost as much as upsetting me. And our kids actually don't want to make us upset. Mm-hmm. I know that is not necessarily what it looks like as a parent, but it bothers them, you know, when what they do seems to make us unhappy. So I don't know, the kids should not bear the burden of our happiness. And
we want to help kids become more resilient.
Yes.
And be able to cope with small disappointments as,
right,
you know, later on they may be bigger and harder.
So we need to be showing them that, you know, that we are okay, and that our expectation is that pretty soon they will be okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you've talked to a lot of parents, interviewed a lot of people, and what's maybe the number one thing that parents name when they ask about parenting and that doesn't make them very happy?
Well, when I talk to people anecdotally, at the moment, the number one thing people are talking about is screen time. The number one thing I found in my research that people named was discipline. And that actually often comes in to screen time. So this was really interesting. I worked with a professor at Fordham University. We created what I would call a survey, and he would call a study, in which we found 1,000 parents who were spread demographically across the country and, you know, in various incomes, and sort of all the pieces that you need to put together to get a representative sample. And one of the things we had was an open-ended question that said, what do you like most and what do you like least? And so many people wrote some variation on discipline that I actually went back and read through the entire survey to see if we had somehow cued that, you know, if we'd been sort of subtly using the word discipline. And I didn't find anything. It just, that's what's hard for our generation of parents.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, whether kids should have chores, you know, when they step out of line. And so many parents don't want to be the bad guy, especially if both parents are working.
Right.
You know, they just don't want to have those hours be having a heart-to-heart.
Yeah.
Or, you know, sending them to timeout. Whatever.
Well, and there's not some established, it's hard to know what to do, I think, for parents now. When, you know, if you go back a generation or two generations ago, there was a pretty established rule about discipline. Like, and it basically went, your kid does something wrong, you give them a consequence, you punish them in some way, shape, or form, and then they learn, and next time they do better. And that was the expectation. That was what the school would do. That was what the parents were supposed to do. There you go. Not everybody did it. People did it in different ways. There was a thing. Now it's much. There's much more of this feeling of, well, you know, they made a mistake, but did they really know it was a mistake? And is the best thing to punish them, or would the best thing to be to show them the right way to do, or you know, would the best thing to be to, you know, create a consequence, or to have them go back and try again, or to have a larger? It feels like we have this bigger range of possible responses.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really hard.
Like trying never to be negative.
some people are like, I never want to say no to my child. I don't get that. Mm-mm. But or just, you know, maybe you have you've tried. Like, you know that if your child does something wrong and you give them a consequence, that you've done that 46 times and it hasn't worked, so now you would like to try something different. So here you are trying to figure out, like, you know, what are we going to do next time we go down this road? And so we're trying to do the best that we can as parents, and that's the discipline part is tough, just because there's an expectation that we will bring our delightfully behaved children out into the world where they will be perfect at the grocery store and in all other, you know, in the restaurant and in all other environments. But when they're not, there's not some, like, all people know is that you're supposed to do something. Nobody knows exactly what.
And what may work one time doesn't
That's
work
right.
the next time. And of course, these children are growing and changing all the time anyway, and so are you, and
yes.
so are we as parents.
Well, that's one thing that happier parents do. They mm-hmm. let their parenting evolve as their kids evolve. But that's so hard, because there mm-hmm. you are, and you think you know, and now all of a sudden you don't.
Mm-hmm. We are talking to KJ D'Alantonia, and this is Book Lovers Cafe. You're listening to KPTZ 91.9 in Port Townsend, and KJ has written a really wonderful and interesting book, How to Be a Happier Parent, Raising a Family, Having a Life, and Loving Almost Every Minute. So back to some of the real problem areas for parents, where, you know, they're trying to maintain this equilibrium and they've got two kids, three kids, and in your case, four children. And, you know, sibling relationships come into the picture, and there's a lot of difficulty around that.
Right. That can be an area that's really causing family unhappiness and parent unhappiness. Parents with younger kids often need to be more involved on the ground. They need to be teaching those kids to resolve their differences, giving them some options, you know, talking through things. And then this is exactly what we were talking about. As their kids get older, it's time to step back and let them enact those things that you've hopefully taught them, but it just doesn't look, you know, it doesn't look like they're learning anything. A lot of the time they're still really going at it, and that can create a lot of unhappiness for parents.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's sibling rivalry, and there's a lot of difference in the way kids behave and how successful they are. And so that can just be, you know, really long term.
Yeah.
And
I think we all know that we're not supposed to compare them. It's hard not to. Some of the stuff to think about when it comes to siblings who aren't getting along is just that that's a pretty natural thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's normal. It's ordinary. It's
they tease,
boring.
They pinch.
One of the things that it brought me huge relief to learn about siblings is that their battles stay physical for so much longer than you would think.
Mm-hmm.
I actually am an only child, so maybe I'm the only person on the planet to whom this is news, but you know, I think some part of me thought that when they were 6 or 7 or 8, they might hit each other, but they would stop when they got into their teenage years. And the truth is, they still walk by and whack each other on the back of the head. It's just a very, you know, physical, contentious relationship. But the great thing about it is that it's a way to learn that you can have sort of a contentious relationship in which you don't agree on everything, and maybe you've had a fight, and yet you can come back together and, you know, work on something or just forget about that thing and go on to the next thing. So our sibling relationships, they really set the stage for moving out into life and having roommates and having partners and having coworkers with whom you don't always agree, and yet you have to get along.
Mm-hmm. I've been thinking about you on the farm and the animals that you have, cats, dogs, chickens, not goats.
No goats. Not and, allowed to have goats.
And I was thinking, has that helped with teaching children about taking responsibility and doing chores?
So chores are such... I think it's really important that kids do chores. And the funny thing is that our household chores are a constant, you know, a constant... I'm always begging. I'm always nagging. I mean, nobody's learning. But the truth is, yeah, the farm chores, the farm chores have to be done, and they have to be done when they have to be done, and the animals have to be cared for, and there's not, you know, there's not a lot of leeway. And a lot of the time what'll happen with a farm chore is it's not something that I could physically go out and do by myself. Like, I need that kid's help. And when you really need a kid's help, they do step up.
Oh.
So that has been huge. I think it's hard to duplicate in a lot of people's lives, but it's not impossible. I mean, other areas where I've seen my kids step up are when, you know, we've had a car problem and have needed to deal with something to do with, you know, a tire or digging, more likely, you know, where we live, digging a car out of the snow. It's not something, you know, mom can't get out of the car and make this happen. I'm going to need all of you. We're going to need to work together. Cleaning out a big, ugly, you know, garage or basement. It's the kind of, when you get a job that has to get finished, that can't be done by the one person that nobody is enjoying, and you all start doing it together, I find that the work sort of progresses to a point where everybody's got past their grumpiness and their griping about the fact that they're doing it, and just becomes something that you're all stuck with, and you all have to finish. Moving house can be that job. So I always encourage people to look for what those jobs are and you know, haul your kids out and get working together. The other nice thing is you end up on even footing, especially if you have teenagers.
I mean,
You're not any better at carrying boxes out of the garage than they are.
Let them put on the music and then everybody pitches in.
Yeah.
Whether it's gardening or cleaning or whatever you're doing.
Yeah, when you can find those and get them involved, it's hugely helpful.
Mm-hmm. Well, I also wonder if you've come across, especially, you know, being an editor for the New York Times, some of the columns, maybe there's been some comments about, well, these women don't know what it's like. They all have white privilege, or they're all, you know, upper class, and you know, it's really different for us out here in the country. So, what do you think about that?
You know, we do tend to hear a lot of a certain voice, and to some degree, that's my voice, right? Mm-hmm. We do tend to hear a lot of. You know, women of a certain age and a certain upper middle class or middle class talking about parenting and talking about our problems. But my research went a lot deeper than that. And one of the responses that I often have to people who say, well, you know, this doesn't apply to, you know, it doesn't apply to everyone is that's actually a pretty condescending attitude to say that just because, you know, somebody is working at a restaurant instead of a law firm, that they aren't concerned about the amount of sports and activities that their kids are in, or that they aren't having a rough time in the morning and trying to find a way to make that better, or aren't trying to figure out whether or not to pay their kids an allowance for their chores. Those are things that we share, along with some of the challenges of being a parent. The fact that our schools let out at 3 and our work almost never does. The fact that that's really hard to find daycare for, you know, kids who are under 5. The ability to spend money on those problems, that's a blessing.
It is.
And a privilege. Mm-hmm. And I think nobody should pretend that it doesn't make things easier. Oddly, it doesn't necessarily make you happier.
Doesn't make you happier, right? To juggle those schedules.
Right.
To, you know, find people to take care of your children, even if you can pay them, you know. So for a time, people tried to stay home for a while, or they found a way to do work online. And so that's all still going on.
Oh, yeah.
And people find different solutions. Let's go back to something for the younger parents, or not the younger parents, but parents
of younger children.
And they always talk about food as being an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all foodies now, or we're trying to be, and we're also conscious of what we're eating. But kids still want pasta and pizza. So what do we do?
Yeah. It's funny because there are so many, like, rules around it. You have to, you know, the lunch has to be organic and it has to be healthy and it has to be balanced and it has to be packed in a waste-free container. And you know, it's just enough to make you weep. People can find mealtimes and dinner times incredibly stressful. So as the author of How to Be a Happier Parent, what I suggest that people do is to look at their dinner or their lunches or their breakfast, you know, whatever it is, and try to figure out, well, okay, what about this is being hard? If it's hard that I get home at 5 and I never know what to cook, all right, then find a solution to that works for you. What works for me is to make a plan every Sunday. But some people hate having a plan. So, you know, put a list of things on the fridge that give your future self a gift, Sunday self. Mm-hmm. You know, put a list of things on the fridge that future parent can cook. If what's making you unhappy is that your kids won't eat what you cook, then you can... You know, just sort of, you can try a bunch of different things. What I often suggest is to make meals that sort of come in they're put together-able. So, you know, you could have just the pasta, or you can have the pasta with the meat and everything else on time, and you can have the salad, you know, make it. And so I'm not an expert in like picky eating and childhood nutrition and that sort of thing. And I don't pretend to be, but I interviewed a lot of them. And most of the response that I got was not to worry about any one single meal that your child is eating, but to look at, you know, a whole week or a whole month, and to know that you're offering good foods. And if your child is not, if at any one given meal, your child is not choosing what you would consider to be the healthiest and balanced number of options, it's okay to just let that go. Kids can get by for a long time eating nothing but pasta mm-hmm. and bread and butter and still learning to enjoy their food and enjoy their meals. And when the pressure's off, it might get a little bit easier for them to try some other things.
We've been talking to KJ Dell'Antonia about her book, How to Be a Happier Parent, Raising a Family and Having a Life and Loving Almost Every Minute of It. Please join me next time to talk more about books and authors. I'm your host, Chris Wilson. You can listen to past Book Lovers Cafes and other programs from our podcast page on the website, kptz.org. And while you're there, you can make a donation to the station as well. I'd like to thank Kate for helping out, and also Dawn, and also all the volunteers and supporters who make this station possible. Join me next time. There's never enough time or to read all the books you want to read, but, well, you know, let's enjoy it while we can. Thanks.
When I'm not doing fine, I keep this in mind. I can take a breath or two. When I want to feel well, I can be still. I can take a breath or two. Breathing in, breathing out. Breathing in, breathing out. When I am still, I can be fine. Breathing in and out.